On Saturday Extra, and Geraldine has been doing this quite assiduously, she's been keeping a watching brief on the GFC and whether the crisis would shock lawmakers and financial authorities around the world enough to act for genuine change in the financial and banking sector. For some time, it looked as if it would really be business as usual, despite the repercussions and the debt crisis in parts of Europe and the US. But changes to the global banking industry, it seems, are afoot, and these will be felt here in Australia too. The Europeans are leading the charge, perhaps not surprisingly, since Europe continues to reel from the financial crisis. Andrew Cornell is a reporter for the Australian Financial Review, and he believes that the drive to re-regulate will have an impact across the globe. Andrew Cornell joins me this morning. Welcome to Saturday Extra.
Thanks very much.
It's a fascinating topic and a big one, but perhaps we start with the notion that change is coming. Overall, how do you think it'll affect the global banking system?
I think in many ways re-regulation captures it because while there's a lot of disagreement amongst regulators in different parts of the world, they do all agree, at least philosophically, that banks should go back to being what banks were in the past, which was an institution that took care of people's deposits and made loans, and in the process helped economies to grow. Now, the crisis was perhaps the final point where they'd got much too exciting and that they were doing a lot more than just taking deposits and making loans, and those extra things they were doing actually nearly brought the system to its knees.
Now, reading about it, it's the Basel-based Bank of International Settlement is driving this. What are we talking about then in terms of re-regulation? What are the key re-regulations they might have?
I think what, and a lot of people would agree with them on this, I think what they decided happened was to get back to that old style of banking, we needed to have more capital in banks and more liquidity in banks and less leverage in banks. Now, what I mean by that is capital is sort of hard currency that banks have, and it's made up of share capital and retained earnings, that real, what we'd call real money. Liquidity differs slightly from that in that liquidity may not be real money, but it can be turned into real money very quickly. And then leverage is how many times you lend out each dollar of that real money. And in the crisis, what we saw were all those things went slightly haywire. There wasn't enough capital when things went bad. Liquidity wasn't true liquidity in that a bank that needed it couldn't suddenly get cash. And leverage, instead of being 10 to 1, which is roughly what it is in global banks, had got up to 30 and 50 to 1.
So that meant when the crash came, when problems started to happen, there wasn't either the money or the assets to anywhere near back those essential debts. Is that right?
Precisely. And that's where Europe in particular got into trouble. And Australia did this too in the US. They provided a backstop for those banks when there wasn't enough hard currency. And in Australia, the Reserve Bank provided that kind of capital and liquidity by buying assets off the banks. But the Reserve Bank in Australia did that very well and very shrewdly and very early, and the Australian banks were nowhere near as poorly managed or as aggressively risk-taking as global banks.
So who is going to drive this change?
It will really be the G20. That is, it used to be the G8, the rich countries of the world that decided what we would do economically. Now, fortunately for Australia, it's the G20, which broadens it a lot more. And they then will delegate to Basel, the group you referred to, the Swiss. It's often called the Reserve Bank for other banks. And there's a financial stability board that has been set up as well. So the G20 will have the political force. Basel will be the implementer of that.
Can they make this stick? Can they get people to agree to it?
They can up to a point, because part of one of the reasons for the crisis is the world of banking is now totally global and totally interconnected. Now, if you want to be part of that club, you have to agree to abide by certain rules, and Basel can set those rules. So in a sense, in theory, if you're going to join the global banking system, you have to play by Basel's rules.
Okay, now I can fully understand how you might talk about liquidity and how you would have to have reserves to back the kind of investments you're making. But there is also, if you like, stage 2 of an even more radical drive that, for example, would introduce super profits a super profits tax on banks. Also, it would limit the salaries of chief executives and board members, etc. That would seem to be a very tough thing to get agreement on, or am I wrong about that?
Yeah, I think you're both right and wrong. I think it would be tough to get agreement on it. I think it would be tough because there's not the same intellectual backing for those sorts of responses to the crisis. I mean, I agree, I think bankers are paid too much money, but I don't agree that banks are too profitable. And the talk of a banking super profits tax, you would have to define what is a super profit for a bank, and I don't think we're anywhere near that in Australia, despite the large numbers. And I think it differs from, say, a resource rent tax, where we can all see that the dirt that gets dug out of Australia belongs to all Australians, and perhaps then we should be able to tax that to a greater extent. But banks are not actually using up a non-renewable resource here. They're acting to create profits, and then we have to look at it and say, well, are those profits too high?
Now, of course, this would mean, if I think you've used the term boring banking, which is another way, I hope, for saying safe banking to some extent, or safer banking. But will this reduce profits and salaries? I mean, profits is probably the key here. Do you think that they will plateau, or what will happen to them?
Look, I think so. I was in Europe just before Christmas and talking to a lot of the regulators. They're talking of profits measured by return on equity, which sort of takes into account the relative sizes of institutions, and they're saying that should be less than 15%. Now, historically, over the last few decades, 15% has been roughly where bank profits have been, but in the run-up to the crisis, the banks were earning profits of over 20% return on equity, and in fact, you know, sometimes in the mid to high 20s. Now, the debate will be, the Australian bankers, the big four bankers, all think that they are good enough to keep earning returns on equity somewhere near 20%, but they all accept that everyone else will only get 15. So this is where we perhaps get agreement that profits overall will be lower, but no particular bank wants to step forward and say, well, yes, our profit will be lower.
It seems to have implications if, for example, you're an investor, and particularly if you're in superannuation. It does seem that the banks are somewhere that the institutional investors go to fill their share portfolio. What are the implications for that kind of investment?
I think that's a very critical part of this whole development, in that for 20 years since the last recession in Australia, we've had an incredibly good run with our banks. And our banks are big, they're well managed, they did learn a lot from the previous crisis here. So they've been both growth stocks and stocks that pay very good dividends, which make them ideal for investors, whether it's retail investors or whether it's superannuation funds. Now, if they're not going to have that same growth, they'll probably still have very good dividends, we hope. They'll still be very good investments, but they won't have that double whammy. So I think there's perhaps a bit of a crisis in expectations coming here, when people do realise that they won't get the same performance they have had for 20 years.
It does seem, too, that the other implication is that if money is essentially more expensive for the banks to borrow or to get hold of, to then lend out, that we're going to be paying more for interest rates. Is that right?
And that's true, too. And even though it's not a popular argument that the banks make, it's very true. For a long time, a bank's cost of funds depended on the same sources, but they were all fairly stable. And the thing that really moved it was when the Reserve Bank in Australia moved their rates up and down. Now it's much more volatile offshore, and it's much more expensive offshore, and the banks raise quite a lot of their money offshore, as they have always done. So what that means now is that interest rates in Australia will be determined more by what happens offshore as well as by the Reserve Bank. And because that's in the end going to be higher, and capital costs more and liquidity costs more, then the product that banks sell, which is loans, will also cost more.
So it sounds like pain is coming. What's the time frame on it?
Well, I think we've already seen over the last 2 years that interest rates have been perhaps structurally higher than people would have expected. And certainly small business will tell you they're paying a lot more than they were. Now, part of that is that they're probably not paying enough before the crisis, which was one of the causes of the crisis.
They won't like you saying that.
No. It's not a popular thing to say. And, you know, the banks certainly don't win any friends by saying it. But if we ignore the banks themselves and listen to what Treasury has said and what the Reserve Bank of Australia has said. That's in effect what they're saying. And now, as we know, move into a, as you say, an era of slightly more boring banking, part of that boring will be, is it slightly more expensive?
And so was it 5, 7, 8, 9 years? What do we think? Before we see, you know, the whole thing brought into play.
This regulation that Basel is setting up has a long time frame of implementation, and it goes right up for the next 6 or 7 years. Now, the banks will move in anticipation of that happening. And you know, I think underlying this, in a lot of cases, is that debt itself was just too cheap and too easy, and that's one of the reasons we had the crisis. So if you say, well, we don't want debt to be so cheap and so easy, what are we really saying? Well, we're saying loans are going to be more expensive.
All right, Andrew Cornell, thank you on that note. We'll leave it.
Thanks very much.
And Andrew Cornell is a journalist with the Australian Financial Review with some sobering thoughts there.